Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Diversity Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Evan Avigora. You know him as Elnor on Star Trek Picard. Now join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Avigora. It's a pleasure to have you on the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing so well. I'm a big fan of yours, Star Trek Picard. I've seen the first season so far, and it was far better than expectations. And thank you so much for being awesome.
No, thank you for having me. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy being awesome when you got some good writers.
Well, I'm sure it helps to make the lines work well as an actor. You know, they owe a lot to you as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think it's a mutual love.
So what inspired you to become an actor?
Wow. So like some of my earliest memories, I'd say growing up, were watching TVs and movie shows. But as soon as the DVD came out and I got to see everything behind the scenes for things, my like love of it just kind of like grew. And then in high school, well, just after high school, I entered into film school, had a bit of an education there. And then from there went off and, you know, tried a bit of different things in order to get into acting. And then I eventually ended up in LA shooting Star Trek Picard.
Oh, wow. So is there any either DVD or particular actor that really kind of lit that spark? You're like, I want to be like that guy.
Well, I actually think, and I think it is because it just came out as well, the most recent version of it, Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man. Like,
oh,
the first, I really remember going to the cinema as a little kid, and the thing that shocked me the most was when he was crawling up the building and someone explained it to me, like how they filmed it. So right now, I'd say just because of the new Spider-Man coming out and I just saw it, Tobey Maguire sticks out at the moment.
That was a hell of a movie. The first Spider-Man movie, I remember watching it when I was younger. And it was such, I mean, it was, as a comic book nerd, to see when your favorite characters show up on the screen like that, it does kind of blow your mind, doesn't it?
It really does. And they did such a good job of it. I even like the third one, Bad Dance.
Yeah. The third one has some quality to it. And there's a few things that they slipped in, you know, obviously when I was doing a Spider-Man review, but a few things that they slipped on. But Tobey Maguire, I don't care what people say, was a great Peter Parker. He, for a guy who was like, what, 30 playing like a 15-year-old, he actually pulled it off.
Baby face for it, for sure. Mm.
So did it blow your mind in No Way Home when all three were on the camera together?
Yeah, I mean, months and months of speculating and then wondering how they're going to be introduced and their time on the screen. Like, I enjoyed what I saw. I loved it.
So as in Star Trek Picard, you play a character called Elnor. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek Picard, when that came out, has had a huge level of hype leading into it. You had that huge build because everyone loved the Picard character. Star Trek just started getting back into people's television screens and getting into people's consciousness again. When you knew you were going to be on that show and you started feeling the hype build, how was that for you?
You know, it wasn't until, I'd say, San Diego Comic-Con when we really kind of understood what we were filming, because, you know, we're filming out in some remote location in California, and all you're doing is you're surrounded by the crew, the director of the block, and, you know, the producers and showrunners, and it's kind of like it's very insulated, so you don't really understand the kind of impact you're making until, you know, when we walked out for San Diego Comic-Con to the large group. I'd say that was when it really kind of like hit home for me, like, oh wow, like I'm actually a part of this.
Were you a fan of Star Trek prior to receiving the role?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of everything sci-fi. I kind of like grew up like that. So my mom's a big sci-fi fan, and you know, there'd always be Star Trek reruns playing, or we'd watch the old movies. She really loved the TOS movies.
Mm.
You know, like Star Wars, Farscape, even grew up watching like Buffy, everything where there's kind of like a fan base I probably, you know, loved growing up. But yeah, definitely Star Trek, large influence, and Picard was my captain.
You know, that was it's such a brilliant franchise. The movies are so good. I mean, the original series, Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country, Voyage Home, Wrath of Khan, those are so iconic now. And, you know, they felt like they elevated the franchise well beyond just, you know, geek TV show to something that was truly quality. And then, like, First Contact with Picard, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's such a great movie.
I know. Even I like Nemesis as well. I think we watched that recently. Party, and just looking at it now, back then it's like, wow, they really did a good job. Like, they did an amazing job of casting, I think, that movie.
Yeah, and the cool thing is Star Trek Picard, the first season, connects so well to First Contact and Nemesis. I mean, were you watching them as research, or were you just like watching them as a fanboy?
I was literally just watching them as a fanboy. They did kind of get, I can't remember what the episodes were, because there was a few from different series about what to watch and what to check out. And a lot of it was TNG, like iBorg and things like that. Even the first episode with Q, because we see the Borg very briefly in that. It's just because I was a fanboy, but I don't remember much about what was on the list, but it was extensive and it was fun, and I ended up watching more.
You know what? When Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard came on air, I must say it kind of revitalized my love of Star Trek again as well, because it waned for a little while after like the second Star Trek return movie, like the, I guess they call them Prime movies. I can't remember the ones with Chris Pine. After around the second one, faded away a little bit from me. Then Discovery and Picard came out, and I started loving it again. I went back and watched, this Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Picard. I said Picard again. Next Generation, the original series, and they are such classic television. And the Borg ones and Picard is that perfect mix of sci-fi and horror that just makes it perfect Star Trek.
I think it was a perfect mix. One of the scenes that really stand out for me in the first season of Picard is when the androids are like hijacking the station. That scene to me is like the perfect mix of horror and sci-fi, done really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, and Brent Spiner plays Data. It's such a perfect character, you know. And you, if I remember correctly, you don't have any scenes with him in Picard, unfortunately. But did you at least get to meet him on set?
Yeah, I got to meet him a few times, actually. The first time, though, was during Comic-Con. I got to sit next to him, and I was kind of just staring at him for a while before he made the introduction, because I was too nervous, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, he's a great guy. Really, really fantastic guy. Love every time I see him on set, love seeing him.
Yeah, I got to meet him at a comic book convention. Unfortunately, that, like, you met him at a comic book convention. Mine was just, to get an autograph from him. But it's a cool moment. I was like, I'm just going to stand over here for a while and nerd out with you. But unfortunately, you got other people.
Yeah. The lines for him would be like going, I'd imagine, ridiculous.
Same for Shatner. Shatner is a long line. I think I had Walter Cummings as well. That was another line that was longer than I hoped. But that was fantastic. So what were you told about Elnor prior to getting the role?
We got given all of us a side, so like a script of a few pages, a name. I'm trying to remember what. I believe it was K-Bar was Elnor's name.
K-Bar?
K-Bar, as in like a...
It's like an angry sheep. K-Bar.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought when I read it. So I think Picard's name was changed to like McCluskey or something like that. It was O'Toole. That was right. It was
O'Toole.
McCluskey, I'm not sure who they, what they, yeah, that was another side that I did. But so I got given like two pages. This kid feels with like a lot of emotion, but is also like shut off and distant. And this guy has come back into his life. So that was the scene I did. And then I found out about Elnor. I think I got sent the script, and I was reading the script, and I was reading the call sheet, and I'm like, who's Elnor? And then I met producers later that day, and they're like, you're Elnor. Like, that's your character's name. So there was like no more confusion. And I, to be honest, I liked it a lot more.
Elnor? Than K-Bot?
Yeah.
I would imagine so. That's really funny, though. So that's a hard thing to sound to play. You're playing a character with a lot of emotion, but also distant. That seems like contradictory almost. How did you dive into that?
Well, they explained further. It's like he has like no real understanding. Like, he's lived a very like sheltered life. He has no idea. So I more saw it to be like he speaks freely, and has no kind of like awareness. Certain aware, like he lacks a certain awareness. Obviously, if you watch the show,
He really is an interesting character, because on the one hand, and we'll get into a little more detail. I mean, he's obviously this kick-ass warrior. He is also, in many ways, even though he's an adult, kind of like a child at the same time, he's not a two-dimensional character by any stretch of the imagination.
No, there's a lot to him. He's got layers. I mean, we see him become more of himself, or become more comfortable with himself and the people around him, I think, as the series and season progressed.
So, but Elnor, for any listeners who may not know, but I'm sure everyone does know who's watching, because this is, you know, a geek podcast. You need to earn your cred, people, if you haven't. That Elnor is, not only is he a Romulan, but he's part of a special sect called, I'm going to get wrong, the Kuat Malat, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Kuat Malat, yeah.
All right, hey, cool. I got it right. Which is a group made of entirely female warriors. So how do you envision that aspect of the character? Not only is he different from, you know, he's a Romulan, he's a different than a lot of, you know, the human fans that you're going to be listening to, but he's also in, kind of an outsider, even in the group that he is in, because once again, it's a female warrior cast, and he's like the only dude in the group.
Yeah, he is. I didn't find that too hard of a stretch to kind of understand. I grew up in a house full of sisters, and I was the youngest, so yeah. Wasn't too much of a stretch of the imagination to relate to that.
So, but the interesting thing is that, once again, he's a character who's never truly accepted as one of the Kuat, I'm going to get the name wrong so many times, but because, once again, he's following the teachings of the group, but he's never going to be counted as truly a member of that group.
I think that's another reason why he, like, went off with Picard, because he knew he'd never be, fully accept, like a fully accepted or a fully fledged member of something that he can't really be a part of. It served its purpose up until that point. But I don't see any place where he could have grown as a person, or, you know, there was nothing keeping him there anymore. And I think this opportunity with Picard, there was so much more to offer, to see, to do, to become. And so that's one of the reasons that I think led him to, you know, coming back and rescuing him.
And I think the cool thing, too, is that the backstory is given between Elnor and Picard in the Picard series, okay? And obviously, they've known each other. They have a history of each other. You obviously do not have a history with Patrick Patrick Stewart in real life, because, like I said, you kind of just met him. How did you fake that connection of this, all this inner turmoil, these dynamics that start off when he was a kid, and that abandonment, everything else, you know, because obviously Elnor is a young boy, but once again, you kind of just met this guy in real life.
That's true, but I mean, as an actor, you try and find those kind of like links into your story and the thoughts that would happen, which requires like a lot of empathy and just kind of like studying and thought and a whole process. It's not like we just went on stage and kind of like did our thing. We did a read through as well, and Patrick is such a kind person, to the point where you do feel like safe with him, because he's just, you know, so sweet. He makes you feel comfortable, like you're part, the person you're acting across makes you feel comfortable, makes you feel like you're in a safe space, and that you're doing things that benefit and that help with the story and that make sense, the choices that we make.
Did you and Patrick Stewart spend time together to try to develop that kind of rapport at all, offset?
Well, I mean, we all sit around. This is all pre-COVID, I will say. But we all sit around and we'd all chat, like, during, in between takes and everything. Although we all weren't fully together as a group, the group that was shooting on the day was always together and talking. We were never, we'd, like, sneak off to our trailers and, you know, not talk to anyone. I think I'm not sure how it is on every other set, but you know, we developed like, you know, a close like friendship.
And I mean, from everything I hear, Patrick Stewart is a very cool guy. He seems very cool when you see him on TV. With, you know, he's good relation with Sir Ian McKellen, who's also very cool apparently. But he is Captain Picard, who's been Captain Picard for a long time, and the name of the show is Picard. Is it intimidating working across from the Picard?
Yeah, I mean, first day, I was freaking out. I was what am I doing here? You know, people talk about a feeling of like imposter syndrome or whatever you want to call it. I don't think it was that. I think I was just starstruck to be opposite this guy. And you still do, you know, that still does happen occasionally. Like I've not gotten in trouble, but I've lost my attention forgetting I'm completely at work. And I just, as if I'm like just watching what's going on. And then it's like, oh, I have to speak. All right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the best thing ever being able to see it in action in front of you live.
Did Patrick Stewart give you any advice about how to either be in that moment in Star Trek or just being a part of that universe that he was like, yeah, you gotta, you know, this, you're about to get hit with millions of fans very quickly.
He does mention the fans and everything like that, but not like the stuff that he'd tell were like old stories from the TNG days, or I don't know, just he's full of like just stories. And in terms of like advice or anything, or what I've like learned from him, it's just literally from being there and like watching how he tackles the scenes and his process. So, I mean, like I learn off everyone. I mean, even him like a lot. So, you know, he's coming back. It's not like a character that's just been created out of thin air. This is a character that had this life that we were all like privy to, and then a bunch of times passed, and you know, the fans know so much and like love this show so much, so you have to do it in the right way. And he did. I think he did a really good job.
Well, I mean, all of you guys did such a great job, and I think Picard had a more pressure on it than Discovery did, because there was such ownership of the Picard character, as you said, that everyone had a very, you know, the guy had been gone for, I can't remember when Nemesis came out, but I think it was like 2000 or something. The guy's been away from Star Trek for almost 20 years. Yeah. So, and everyone had such an opinion on what they wanted from Picard and the expectations of Picard. It must have been, I mean, did you guys feel that on set at all, the expectations?
No, we didn't really, because we're all so insulated. We didn't really get, you know, by the time the trailer came out, we were nearly wrapped filming. So it's not like like everyone lost their minds when the trailer first came out, and you know, when Seven appears, and there's that, you know, I remember the screams in the crowd, but there's nothing you can do up until the show comes out, and like by the time the season airs, we've already finished. So it's more just like sit back and see what happens, as opposed to, you know, freaking out and being like feeling the pressure.
I mean, you just didn't get to play against iconic Picard, but you played against iconic Jeri Ryan 709. I mean, that's another character that people know and love from the Star Trek Voyager days. Well, you know, once again, what was that like? Did Jeri Ryan feel like, you know, once again, the icon, another icon of Star Trek, and you're playing right against him as an equal, you know?
She really made me feel like I had a voice on set. Being a young actor and very green and new to everything, she made sure that like she made me realize that my voice matters, you know, that even if it's your first job or your 10th or your 1,000th, you know, everyone's just as important. So, but acting across, I remember one night in the Borg cube with the last scene of the day, we were the last people, was sundown, and we'd been filming all day. I arrived when there was no sun, and I left when there was no sun. And Jeri and I just couldn't stop laughing, and it wasn't even a funny scene. We would just make eye contact and start giggling. So yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. And you know, the other cool thing about your character too is that he's a very fierce combatant, and you have a background as a boxer, a really good boxer. So how did that help you deliver the physical demands of playing Elnor when you already had this boxing background?
It just meant, one, I had a really good fitness base already, and two, they could do more with me, so I could do more with stunts. So that was kind of like the benefit. And like, I'm not saying that doing all of that helped. It just, there was a base there and an understanding of like coordination and sequences that they could like work with. I feel like any martial artist or like dancer, it'd be the same thing. Anything that's like sequential in a process. But yeah, it really helped. I mean, we did sword training like for 3 hours a day, like the first 3 weeks of filming.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Preparing for a fight in, I think it was like, there were a few fights. And then the Borg sequence took the longest. But that was so much fun filming. I still had a stunt person. Anahi did everything, like all the cool flips that I did. I sadly didn't do that, but everything to do with the physical, like combativeness, that was me.
That's pretty cool. So how was it? Hard was it to learn to train to sword fight?
I still struggle with it now. No, we learned like basic stances, positioning, and once I looked like I kind of knew what I was doing with that, that's when we moved into the sequences. So after I think it was like the first fight, it was just I already knew my poses, so it was just a matter of getting the poses in order.
So I mean, I assume it wasn't a real sword, you know, a sharp sword you're actually using on set. I mean, was it a blunted sword?
I have it.
Yeah, you have the sword. Oh, that's badass. Did you steal it?
No. They gifted. I asked for it because they had like, I think like 6 or 7 of them in preparation.
Yeah.
This one was one that got cracked slightly from the Borg cube scene. So I know exactly where it, like, I know that I've actually used this one instead of it being like one of the spares. So I've got an actual sword. It's like rubber. And then I think they just add slightly cooler effects over it on video to make it look more realistic.
If it's convenient, do you have it? You can just grab it, or
1 second. Is that
all awesome? Right? Yes, certainly. Well, certainly. That's awesome.
All right. So here is the sheath and everything, and then take it off, and it's meant to be like a wooden staff, and then you open it up, and there it is.
So where's the crack? Can you show us?
It's chipped. It's chipped right here.
Mm. Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool.
So no, I know exactly when I used it in the show, and I'm I play with it sometimes.
Yeah, I would totally do that too.
Oh yeah.
that's one of the most badass Star Trek props I would imagine. You got like an actual like Star Trek like sword, you know, they get to play with. And so when no one's looking, are you just like in the background just like playing around with your sword fighting shadows?
At work, I'm always just fiddling with it. I think someone brought in one of those fake butterfly knives, a prop knife. And I just like fiddling with, it was like a fidget spinner, you know? So the sword's the same thing. They would take it away from me because I'd play around with it too much.
That's going to be funny. They took it away from you. Yeah.
I'm gonna hide it from them moving away, you know, but they always find it. So.
So the blade itself, so it's a rubber blade, you said?
It's like a plastic blade that's like bendable with a bit of rubber in it. Yeah.
So you can't really hurt anybody with that, I imagine. Like, no one accidentally got hurt, like, from your blade.
No, thank goodness. I don't think I could live with myself if that happened. we were all very careful. And even though everything looks like it's close up and very, like, everything's, like, very exaggerated and, you know, slower. And that's why we spend so long doing sequences and drilling it into perfection so people don't get hit.
Yeah. So now when you go into public, people be like, do the sword thing, do the sword thing.
Just start taking it everywhere with me.
Yeah, you should. And it looks lethal.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't then.
So as Elnor, so you're not only a trained combatant, but you're also by the, as trained as growing up, he was trained in the ways of absolute candor. But he's also very naive about the world. So he's kind of, I mean, on one hand, this lethal killer, but the other hand, this very naive guy. Is that a safe combination for an individual to have?
I think it depends on how you look at it. I mean, even his please my friend choose to live, like that's a pretty direct kind of saying. It's just pretty much means the only outcome here is that you're dying. So I think that comes from his kind of like naivety and sheltered education. But I mean, a person with lethal skills and not naivety, but like maybe with a cruel heart would probably be a lot more, lethal. So I guess someone with lethal skills and naivety, kind of balances the rest of the bad people out.
But you do have some of the most badass lines in all of Star Trek. I mean, like you said, the lines choose to live and I regret your choice. They're just like badass, like almost like Clint Eastwood type lines you get to say right there.
I know. And when I read it on the page as well, I remember reading like, please, my friend, choose to live. And I was like, that's so cool. And credit to Michael Chabon and his incredible writing and the whole writing crew for, you know, my debut episode. It was one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, because choose to live, the way that phrase works, on the one hand, it's kind of, it's like, it's such a, it's a nice phrase, you know, empathetic. I don't want to have to hurt you. But on the other hand, it's such a badass, I know I'm going to hurt you. And it's such a great combination of, I'm being a nice guy, but you're going to fucking die. You know?
Those are some of like the best moments with Elnor as well. Like, I remember even in the last or second last episode of season one, I was going to mention something from season two, but I can't do that.
I know.
When it looks like he's just tied up and handcuffed, and then he knocks out the two golden bald androids, just like it's, you know, was all part of the plan. So I like Elnor.
So in your opinion, what does that demonstrate about his morality? The idea of, I regret your choice. And these are people that aren't enemies. He's people who he's going to get into lethal combat with. What does that say about him?
Well, these are people who have, like, I think he viewed it initially as like people who are either in the way or people who are themselves making a stupid choice. It's not like it's out of his hands after that. Like, he's given them the option and they've taken the stupid option. But I'd say after what he's gone through and everything he's experienced in season one, even from that moment, because I think there was a part that was left. People have to understand, when you write scripts, a lot of stuff has to get cut in order to fit a time. So, you know, parts of the story don't make it. And I believe it's mentioned somewhere that him chopping that Romulan's head off, that's his first kill. That was the first person he's ever killed.
Oh, wow.
So his perspective of death and his understanding of taking a life, I think, changes after that and continues to change. Even when we see that moment where we think Picard's passed away, and then it turns out he comes back in the android body. You know, that still shows the difference he sees in death and the growth and change he's had.
So that moment where we find out that it's his first kill, is that your best moment that's been was cut? Is there any other moments that you thought to yourself, you wish they could have squeezed it in somewhere?
I think it was just mentioned like in passing, like very briefly, like that moment. And it's not really like scenes or anything that gets cut. It just means it's like the length of the scene sometimes. But it's never anything that's too impactful to like the story. It just happens with every show. Even movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so season two, obviously, which we're going to get into a little bit, and feel free to spoil all of it. I'm just kidding. So in season two, we all know Elnor is going to show up in Picard season two, which debuts beginning of March, I believe. March, like second or third, something like that. So is there anything you can hint about how your character is further explored in this second season?
Some time has passed. I'm not going to say how much time has passed for everyone since season one. And Elnor is... we see some development, possibly him wearing something that's not his co-op Malat uniform. But like a little bit of time has progressed. And we see him in a different place, in a different environment. I don't want to spoil anymore. I'm trying to say stuff without saying stuff. That's pretty much all I think I can give. But there's some cool stuff. I mean, we've seen some cool shots from the trailer.
Well, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about season two, and you're welcome to just wave me off and be like, sorry, dude. Okay, so let's see if you can answer this one. When the story season two starts, has the group stayed together or at least stayed in contact?
What do you mean?
The characters on the show, did they maintain as almost like a crew on that ship, or did they go their separate ways, but they still kept in touch with each other, like Picard and Elnor and them all? Are they still in communication?
I mean, like, yeah, they're still in communication. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. good job answering the question. So we also know the season two, this part has been spoiled in the commercial, in the advertisement, so you can probably mention this. Season two features Q. Which is someone everyone loves. Everyone loves Q from, you know, TNG, and he was in Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and it shows up everywhere.
In Lower Decks, I think, too.
And what?
I think he's in Lower Decks as well.
Oh, really? I didn't even know. I have not seen Lower Decks, to be honest with you. And for just one of the few ones I had not, I think I watched the first episode, but for some reason I didn't watch. And also we know as well, there's time travel shenanigans at play because that's been ruined in, not ruined, but shown in the commercials. So we all know that. So the question is, Q is always targeting Picard. It's always about Picard, usually. Mm. Is there any direct messing around with Elnor with Q?
Yeah, Q has, Elnor's got a lot. I'm going to try and think about how to answer this.
Fair enough. Take your time.
Elnor, a lot of what happens to Elnor is because of Q.
Okay, that's very interesting and cryptic. Yeah. Positively cryptic. Or negatively, can you say that?
Mm-mm.
Fair enough. So, Q, I'm going to make sure I get the name right. John DeLancey plays Q.
Yep.
What was he like to act across from?
He's really funny. All the every legacy cast you run into, there's not a bad like one in the bunch, you know what I mean? Mm. So it's always great to see them and them kind of like do their thing, like how Patrick's been doing his thing. And so it's just like great to see. It was, yeah.
So how many episodes encompass season 2 of Picard?
I think it's, I don't know.
Is there anything you can tell us or listeners about what to expect from season 2 of Picard?
It's full of Easter eggs, which even some people have found out like just from the trailer. Some really good throwbacks. We did learn some new things about old characters, and even the introduction of some new ones is just like really, really good. Once the first episode airs, I'm very curious to see like what the fan theories are, how the season will end, because even reading them last season, I was like, wow, some people came like pretty close to guessing everything.
So I'm going to see if you can answer this question because you're here, so I might as well just ask you. Do you get to say choose to live in the second season?
I don't think I do.
No? Oh, no.
I think I say it in Romulan or I say something else. Never mind.
Oh, no. You got to fit it in the next season. What I read was that season 2 and season 3 were shot back to back.
Mm.
Is season 3, the shooting for season 3 already over?
No, I don't think I'm allowed to comment on whether we're filming or on how far into filming season 3 we are. But production shut down early January, I believe, which was reported on Deadline anyway. So I'm not going to get in trouble for mentioning that. But season 3 filming. Yeah.
And you're in season 3, it sounds like.
We'll have to wait until season 3, won't we?
is it weird to start season 3 before people even saw season 2? I mean, trying to talk about season 2, knowing that you already know season 3, what happens after that, that's a whole lot of spoilers that are sitting on you that you're just not allowed to talk about.
We're entrusted with a lot of secrets that we need to keep. But that's why they're so good. And that's why the shows are so good, because if everyone knew what was going to happen, no one would want to watch it.
And it must be kind of hard. Like when season 2 is over and you know, there's almost, I can't remember, I don't know how many months there were between the finished shooting and it's airing, but is it hard to be sitting on these secrets and you can't tell anybody, but I assume the other people on the show know. Do you feel like when it finally airs, you can just like exhale, like, oh, okay, now let's talk about it. I can finally talk about it.
Yeah, and it's like for every episode as well, you're like, oh, come on. So I want to hear what people, you know, you want to hear the enjoyment from the fans. You want to hear them, you want to hear how excited they are, because it should be exciting for them because it's exciting for us as well.
Just a final question. Which episode of season 1 was the episode you were most dying for people to finally watch?
Me, after I get left on the Borg cube.
Yeah, that was the one that you were like, God, I want to talk about this right now.
Yeah, and like even people are like, what's happened to him? You know, it was cool to be, you know, like speculated about. And then even the teaser for the next week shows 7 showed Seven showing up. So, you know, it was like, how are they going to meet up? What's going to happen on the cube? She's coming back, you know. It was a cool moment. That's why I really wanted people to see that.
Is there a episode in season two that equaled the expectations of that episode for you?
We'll find out.
Well, like I said, I think, so like we said, season two Picard comes out, I think we said beginning of March. Is it March 2nd, 3rd? I can't remember the exact date.
March 3rd.
March 3rd. All right, that's very cool. And like I said, it looks awesome. The show looks awesome. And I kind of wish we could talk about it because it looks so cool. And whenever you can talk about season two and season three, I hope you come back on the show and talk about it because this was awesome. I want to thank you so much for coming on.
That's fun. Thank you for having me.
Totally my pleasure, sir. Have a fantastic night and thank you again.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
You as well.